Okay, well, good morning, everyone out there in internet land. I'd like to start this sermon today by saying how great a privilege it is for me to be here and able to preach from a book of the Bible that has touched my heart so greatly over the years. And it's my prayer that from this sermon that you will also be touched by the wisdom that is in Ecclesiastes. So let's all look at the passage together. At first glance, what comes to mind is just how depressing the passage really is. When I first read this book many years ago, I was all, man, the guy who wrote this really had some issues. Somebody get this guy some Prozac. I actually rather enjoyed this book on a sort of a dark and pessimistic level. Because this may actually surprise those of you who know me, but when I was a young fella, I was a bit of a pessimistic pup, young pup. So, and now that I think of it, as I'm a middle-aged man, not much has actually changed in that area. I'm the kind of chap who, when pondering Murphy's Law, and that is anything that can go wrong will go wrong, I'm convinced that Murphy was actually an optimist. So when we look at these verses, we do see what looks like a very dark and pessimistic passage. Looking at verse 2, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless. Then to verse 15, what is crooked cannot be straightened, what is lacking cannot be counted. For me, the knockout punch comes in verses 17 and 18. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly, but I learned that this too was a chasing after the wind. For with much grief comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. I don't know about you, but after reading the very depressing tone of that passage, I'm tempted just to shut the Bible, shut down the ARPC Facebook page, and head on over to Netflix to do an afternoon of binge watching. And as tempting as this idea is, I'm sure it would upset Weber no end if we did it. And more than that, you would lose the opportunity of finding out about this book and the message that the teacher gives to us. So let's work through this together so we can understand, ultimately, the message of the book of Ecclesiastes. To begin with, we need to look below the surface, at the history and the context of Ecclesiastes, to fully understand what the teacher is trying to tell us. To do this, you need to cast your minds back to the kingdom of Israel in the time of King Solomon's reign. Imagine a great hall full of people assembled together to hear the wisdom of a great and wise king. We know such gatherings did occur from 1 Kings 4:32 to 34. It says, he, that is Solomon, spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs numbered 1,005. He spoke about plant life, from the cedar of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the walls. He also spoke about animals and birds, reptiles and fish. From all nations, people came to listen to Solomon's wisdom. Sent by all the kings of the world who heard of his wisdom. With this in mind, we can then regard the book of Ecclesiastes as a speech from a wise king to those who are seeking to learn from his wisdom. Also, and most importantly, to understand Ecclesiastes, we need to look at the word meaningless that occurs in this chapter and all throughout Ecclesiastes. The word in Hebrew is chabel, and its literal meaning is vapor or breath. The NIV here translates the word as meaningless. In the ESV and in the NASB, it translates it as vanity. In the New English Translation and in the Holman, it translates it as fleeting. As you can see, the word can actually be understood in multiple ways. The best way to view it is to actually look at it in its original sense, and that of vapor, or pointing to something that is fleeting or temporary, something that soon passes out of sight or memory, something that quickly fades and then disappears. When we understand the background of what the teacher means by the word meaningless, when we look at verses 1 and 2, it becomes much clearer. We understand that when verse 2 says, meaningless, meaningless, utterly meaningless, says the teacher, everything is meaningless, this is not a cry of desperation or surrender from him. This is in fact a warning that all is temporary and fleeting. The teacher here is telling us that the things you strive for in life are temporary and they will quickly end. I saw a powerful example of this when I was in Israel at the end of last year. I was on a study tour with QTC, and while we were there, a group of Ethiopian Jews were celebrating the festival or the holiday of Sigd. For thousands of years, Ethiopian Jews had dreamt of celebrating Sigd in the Promised Land. And since the 1980s up until now, the Israeli Parliament and the Israeli Defence Force, the IDF, had been bringing the Ethiopian Jews to Israel to live. They can now finally live out their dream of celebrating Sigd in the Promised Land. When I heard about this, I was very happy for them, that they could finally live out this dream that was so long in the making. And as great as it is, I have one question for the Ethiopian Jews now. Now what? You've lived out your dream. You've celebrated for 2 days in mid-November, something that you've longed to do for thousands of years. Now what? After more than 1,000 years in the making, the celebration is over for those people. Their living out of this dream is fleeting and it's temporary. It was not meaningless for them in any way. It was just temporary. And now this group of Ethiopian Jews must now move on to fill the void that is left in their life by this now fulfilled dream. Friends, this is the same for us in the decisions we make and in the activities that we do in life. It is not meaningless or wrong to eat a fine meal with family and friends. And it's not wrong to go on a cruise around the Pacific or on a holiday to Europe, after the COVID-19's over, of course. None of this is wrong, it's just temporary. The point the teacher is making here in these verses is that the things we do on earth are transient, they are fleeting. We then see the teacher telling us in verses 3 to 11 of this endlessly repeating circular nature of life here on earth. In verses 4 to 7 we read, "Generations come, generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All the streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place where the streams come from, there they return again." The teacher here is helping us to understand not only are the things we do in life fleeting, but even our lifespan is fleeting when we compare it to the backdrop of the earth which God has placed us on. Days come and days go. Generations come and generations go. When we consider this, we realise that our whole lives are but a breath of vapour, and like the grass of the field, we are soon gone. This is clearly demonstrated in verses 9 to 11. It says, "What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, 'Look, this is something new'? It was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them." Last year, as I already mentioned, I went on a trip to Israel and Jordan. When I was there, I visited some of the great ruins of the former empires who had ruled those nations. I was struck by the truth of these verses. As I was walking through the ruins of the once mighty Nabataean, Greek and Roman empires, I saw impressive monuments to men long forgotten. I walked to the temples that were once great buildings in their time, and now they are just ruins being broken down slowly by the winds and the sands of the desert. As great and mighty as these kings and these empires were, they are now ruins of a long forgotten era. James in the New Testament shares this same message for us. In James 4:13 to 15, it says, "Now listen, you who say, 'Today or tomorrow, we will go into this or that city. Spend a year there, carry on business and make money.' While you do not even know what will happen tomorrow, what is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, 'If it is the Lord's will, we will do this or do that.'" Friends, from a worldly perspective, we too will one day join the great rulers and empires of the past ages and become forgotten on this earth. The houses and cars you owned, the qualifications you earned, the memberships in your local sporting and social clubs will all be forgotten. Ultimately, your descendants will forget your name and any memory of you. In my case, I have no knowledge of my great-grandparents. I'm told that I'm named after my great-grandfather on my mother's side, but that is all I know about him. The point is, your earthly legacy and everything you have will be forgotten. From this part of the passage, we see the teacher's message for us is that not only are the things we do on earth fleeting, but our lifespans are also short. When we move on to the third section of the passage, we see that the teacher talks about the pursuit of worldly wisdom. In verses 12 to 18, we read, "I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I have seen all things done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted." Friends, the teacher here is telling us two important things. Firstly, he's telling us that he is a king. And secondly, that he is a seeker of all knowledge and wisdom to solve the mysteries here on earth. From these two declarations, we see that the teacher as king would have had massive amounts of money at his disposal. He would have likely had access to the great libraries of literature. He would have been able to learn multiple languages and be educated by the finest teachers around. He could have sent his servants to the kingdoms around to collect animals and plants to study. We see that this is a man who is best placed to find all the worldly wisdom needed to solve the mysteries that he seeks an answer for. The teacher then tells us that in his pursuit he has seen all things done on earth, and he finds the pursuit meaningless. It is fair to say that in this verse the teacher really is describing something that is meaningless and not just something that is fleeting. He does this by comparing it to a pointless of activity, the activity of chasing after or shepherding the wind. He then also mentions another task that is impossible, and that is counting something that you don't have. The teacher here is pointing to the mysteries of the world that cannot be solved. Just as you can't chase the wind or shepherd the wind, there are mysteries on earth that we cannot solve. In verses 16 and 17, we read, "I said to myself, 'Look, I have increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge.' Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I have learned that this too is a chasing after the wind." The teacher is telling us that he is the wisest of all in his kingdom and learned much, and yet he tried to study more again. This time he tried mad and foolish pursuits to occupy his mind. He then ultimately realized that this too was pointless. He tells us in verse 18, "For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief." The more the teacher learned, the more grief he felt, as each new piece of knowledge points to the meaninglessness of the quest to solve these unsolvable mysteries. This trap of seeking worldly knowledge is something we can all fall into. Today we face the same danger that the teacher faced all those years ago. In this digital age, we have access to limitless amounts of information. Information that can ultimately overcome our minds. Just like the teacher who tried to master all the worldly knowledge and grasp the unsolvable mysteries, we too can pursue mysteries that will ultimately leave us full of grief. In modern terms, a summary of the teacher's point is captured nicely in the words of the fictional character named Slarty Bartfast from the book of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. When asked about trying to understand the mysteries of the universe, Slarty Bartfast said, "Perhaps I'm old and tired, but I always think that the chances of finding out what is really going on are so absurdly remote that the only thing to do is to say, hang the sense of it and keep yourself occupied." These great words of Slarty Bartfast not only echo the wisdom of Ecclesiastes 1, but it also echoes the wisdom of Ecclesiastes 8:15. In that verse it says, "The teacher says, 'So I commend enjoyment of life, because there is nothing better for a person under the sun than to eat, drink, and be glad. Then joy will accompany them in their toil all the days of the life God has given them under the sun.'" After pondering the wisdom of the teacher, we are left asking, what are we to do? if our actions in life are fleeting, if our lives on earth will ultimately be forgotten, and if the pursuit of excessive pursuit of worldly wisdom will leave us sorrowful, what are we to do? Friends, the answer to these questions lie in chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes. Here we see what the ultimate point that the teacher is making. His point begins with the beautifully poetic verses of verses 1 to 8. These verses actually resonate with me on a very deep and personal level, because after 20 years of working as a wardsman in public hospitals, I've seen these situations described in these verses played out many times, too many times to count. When I read this passage, I'm deeply touched by the teacher's words and reminded of all the people who I've gotten to know and help in my career. I will read these verses to you from the ESV translation, which I think is just such a beautiful and poetic translation. So beginning from verse 1. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near of which you say, I have no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain. In the day when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men are bent and the grinders cease because they are few and those who look through the windows are dimmed and the doors on the street are shut. When the sound of the grinding is low and one rises up at the sound of a bird and all the daughters of song are brought low. They are afraid also of what is high. And terrors are in the way. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags itself along. And desire fails, because man is going to his eternal home. And the mourners go about the streets, before the silver cord is snapped, and the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. And the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity. In these passages, the teacher is showing us beautifully how the cycle of life will stop for all of us. Importantly, in the last verse of the book of Ecclesiastes, the teacher outlines the most important point of his teaching. In verse 13, we read, "The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil." Friends, this is the point of Ecclesiastes. Your life is fleeting and temporary. The things that you do are fleeting. From a worldly perspective, all you are, all you have done, will be forgotten here on earth. This then must not be the focus of your life. The focus of our life is God. We must keep his commandments. We must live our lives and make our choices according to God's commandments. We must then ask, what are God's commandments? The answer can be found in Matthew 22:34-40. When Jesus was asked what the greatest commandment was, he replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, love your neighbour as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. For believers today, God has blessed us with something that the teacher did not have. The teacher did not know the answer to the greatest mystery of life, the mystery that has been revealed in Jesus. It is Jesus who makes our vapour and breath-like state into something solid. It is Jesus who gives us meaning to the choices that we make and to the things that we do. Along with the great commandment to love God and others, Christ gives our fleeting lives here on earth a purpose. In Matthew 28:19-20, Christ tells his disciples, "Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." Friends, this is the missing piece of information that the teacher did not have. Our focus must be on Jesus and on sharing him with others. By doing this, we will see people coming to know Jesus as their Lord and Saviour. The result of this great work on earth is not fleeting or meaningless. It lasts for eternity. Although our lives here on earth are fleeting, before God we will be remembered. We will be judged for everything we do, whether it's good or evil. I want to leave you with this challenge. Are you living your life with God as your focus? Or are you chasing after the wind? Are you filling your minds with meaningless study of worldly wisdom? Or are you seeking God's wisdom? Are you loving God and Jesus with all your heart, souls, and mind? Are you loving your neighbours as yourself? Friends, choose what you do in life wisely, as ultimately your lives will end. The cycle will stop, and you will one day return to the God and Creator who gave you life. Are you ready for that day?